everyone, it's Joe Jordan. Thanks for tuning again to the TC America podcast. Just wanted to let everyone know that at Portland, I had some questions. A lot of it was around my social media and some of the things I've been doing. And I want to make sure everyone understands that this is, although I am affiliated with the SRO, I work weekends for them. I do, along with Gino Carini, I do the PA and the satellite radio broadcast, Sirius XM satellite radio broadcast on channel 383. This podcast is mine. It's actually not the series. Of course, I'm sharing the name a little bit with TC America just so everyone identifies it. But the views and the social media and me trying to be funny is all me. It's no one at SRO. And it's not SRO's property. It's my property. So just wanted to make sure everyone was clear on that. Sure do appreciate everyone listening. An interesting episode this time around. Getting to know Taylor Hagler with 10 questions. We got Bozy Tatarich, who a lot of you probably know but don't know his story. He's a crew member for the Tech Sport Racing team, and he also, as a youth, his family immigrated here out of a refugee area in Montenegro. He was in the former Yugoslavia and moved here when he was 10, didn't speak any English. Is now, his story is very interesting with his family, and he's now an automotive rider as well as a crew member. So I think a very interesting episode. Hope you enjoy it. Again, I thank you for listening, and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Touring Car America Podcast. This is where touring car racing comes to life. You'll get in-depth interviews with drivers, series officials, auto manufacturer reps, and unique personalities through SRO, America's Touring Car Division. This is the Touring Car America Podcast, and this is Joe Jordan.
This is the TC America Podcast, 10 Questions with Taylor Hagler. Taylor, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Question number one, what was the first car you ever owned?
The first car I ever owned was I believe it was a 2004 Trailblazer.
Trailblazer. You're not totally sure, but that's what you think it was, huh?
I know for sure it was a Trailblazer. I think it was a 2004. I'm not positive on the year.
All right, no worries. Question number two. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
I wanted to be everything, to be honest. Like, when I was little and my dad started watching NASCAR, I wanted to be a NASCAR driver. And then I got really into animals and I wanted to be a vet. And then I wanted to be, like, a professional horse rider. I kind of went all over the place.
So you were a typical kid. I mean, that's what most kids do, right? You gave the most logical answer to that question that I've had, and I think you're the ninth person I've interviewed. No one ever can think like that. So, yeah, that's what I expect most people to say, but they have a hard time with it. So, yeah, as a kid, you want to be everything, right? I mean, it's part of being a kid and figuring it out. Number three.
Thing I wanted to do is everything.
Yeah, everything. There you go. Question three, do you have brothers and sisters? If yes, how many and where are you in the mix?
I have one older sister, so I'm the youngest.
You're the baby.
I'm the baby.
Question four.
Pros and cons.
Yeah, I'm the youngest of six, so I totally get it.
Oh.
I think with two kids, it's a little bit more difficult. I mean, not difficult, but with six, I definitely had all the advantages, and I admit that and know that, and it's just the way life is. So my eldest brother, who is not Jim, who you know, my eldest brother Jeff, who may be listening, yes, you're right, Jeff, I had it easy. You had it so hard, and I feel really sorry for you. All right.
It happened.
Yeah, question number four. What's your go-to order at a restaurant?
You know what? That's a hard one. Kind of just depends on the restaurant. I have like four or five that I get the same thing at every time I go. And it's typically, like, the most simple thing. Like, one restaurant, I always get quesadillas.
Okay.
Another one, I get the same pasta.
That's good enough. I mean, we get it. So yeah. It depends on the type of restaurant, but which one's your...
I don't really have any, like, favorites.
Do you have a favorite restaurant?
No, I've never been able to pick a favorite.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I've never been able to do it.
Question number 5. What do you wish you knew when you started racing that you know now?
You know, I've been thinking about this one.
Because you've listened to him, so you know. So I'm going to have to change up the question soon, I think. But yeah, you've been thinking about it. That's good.
I've been thinking about it, and I haven't been able to come up with an answer. I mean, like, I've watched it for so long. I don't really think that there was very many things that, like, I didn't know going into it. And, like, coming from Specmiato, like, I knew it wasn't going to be, like, that different other than, like, the level of competition. I guess, like, I wish I would have just started it earlier. And I know, I think last week or a few weeks ago, I think it was Mason Filippi that said, like, he wished he would have known that, like, people were nicer and, like, it was a little bit more of, like, a family setting. I definitely agree with that. That would have been a good thing to know, but I've just kind of started in it, so it's not too late for that one.
All right, so in horse, when you're jumping horses, was it not a friendly atmosphere amongst competitors? Was it?
No, not really. Like, if you, like, rode in, like, a big barn, you were friends with, like, the people that you rode with within that barn, but you never really associated outside of your barn.
Wow. I had no idea. So it's very...
No, it's a completely different environment. It was not as friendly. Obviously there's going to be some people that are friendly outside of their barn, but most people weren't.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Question number 6. What's something that you failed at?
I actually kind of failed at school. I originally went into college trying to be a vet, and I think I made it one semester and, like, quit.
Well, I mean, if I went to school for a vet, I would make it maybe the first day, and I'd be done. I know how hard that is.
It was intense. I didn't even make it past chemistry, and I was like, no, I'm done. That's not going to happen.
Well, it's actually better you've learned earlier than later. Like, imagine if you were a year a year and a half in and you're like, man, I just can't do this. I think it's better to find out sooner than later.
Oh, agreed.
Okay, question 7. If you could choose walk-up music, like in a baseball game, what song would you pick as your walk-up music?
I have 2 songs that I'm really into right now. Okay. And I think they're both very fitting for that question. Because I've been thinking long and hard about that one.
I'm ready for it.
Okay, so obviously You Should See Me in a Crown by Billie Eilish, which I had in a recent video that Travis Colbert did on my social media.
Yep.
And then the other one is Cold Blooded by Zaid Wolf.
Okay. I've never heard Cold Blooded. I know the other one because I saw your video, but I also know it as well. But Cold Blooded, I don't know. I'm going to have to listen to that one.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right. Question number 8. What do you do on a normal non-race weekend?
A normal non-race weekend, I honestly either sit in my apartment and hang out with my dog, or I go and, like, hang out with my sister and, like, all of our friends because I live, like, 5 minutes from her.
Got it. Question number 9.
What's exciting?
Yeah, no, nothing wrong with that. Sometimes you just need to chill out and kind of get get everything about you back in you.
It takes me about a week to recoup after race weekend.
Yeah, is it mentally the toughest part? I always know that I call it postpartum. Monday and Tuesday after race weekend, one, I'm exhausted, but two, I just want it to keep going. So the fact that it's not going, I get kind of down, depressed.
Yeah. I'm, like, mentally exhausted and then, like, physically exhausted because every time, like, I'm starting to fly to races now. So when I'm flying back, I have to fly at, like, the latest flight possible. So I get home at, like, 2:30 in the morning and I'm just not okay.
Definitely wears you out. Okay, question 9. What's your favorite book?
My favorite book... I don't know. I haven't written a book in a long time.
Wait,
I used to read a lot when I was in like high school, but like
I was gonna say, you're a 23-year-old college student. I just imagine like spring breaks, hanging out. I guess you're too busy drinking then to read a book. I guess maybe, but
actually, the last spring break I went on, me and one of my friends drove to Utah and like hiked in Utah for a week.
I mean, it's a great place to hike. Don't get me wrong, but that's not what I was expecting to hear from a young.
I never did the whole party scene for spring break. It wasn't my thing.
Huh? Okay. So you went up.
But I mean, I'm reading a book right now about mythology. That's pretty cool. Okay. I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but it's a pretty good book.
Well, what's the name of it? Do you remember?
I can't think of a favorite. It's The Classical Tales of Mythology by Edith Hamilton.
Okay, we'll put that down. And I like it that you have this problem with naming favorite things. Are you worried about hurting someone's feelings or specifically picking one out, right? Because you didn't you couldn't think of the restaurant, you couldn't think of a favorite food.
I am the most indecisive person ever.
Except when you put a helmet on, right?
The dreaded question is, where do you want to go eat? Because my answer is genuinely, I don't care. As long as it's food, I'm down.
All right.
I don't have a favorite place.
That's classic. Question 10. I don't know where this one's going to go, but you're alone in your car. Do you sing along with the music?
Of course. Always. Doesn't matter what it is. Like, I've got a whole range of genres from, like, country to, like, what's up and coming, like, reggaeton, and I even try and sing along to that, and it's in Spanish, so obviously I can't.
So you're singing in Spanglish, then? Is that what you're doing?
I try. I can catch, like, one Spanish word every now and then, and I'm like, hey, I know that word. I got it. Next time it comes around.
I love it.
But that's about as far as that one goes.
All right, Taylor, thanks for playing along with TC America Podcast 10 Questions.
Thank you for having me.
Corksport Performance is your Mazdaholic stop for performance parts. Since 1998, Corksport has been giving love to all the ignored Mazda models which everyone drives. 20 years later, Corksport is a leader in manufacturing a full range of performance parts for the Mazda Speed 3, the Mazda 3, the ND MX-5, and more. We have real people that will take your phone call. None of that email-only BS from online-only stores. Or a store being run out of their mom's basement in Detroit by a guy named Chuck. Corksport supports simple bolt-on mods, giving you guidance and advice to build your Mazda Speed 3 to over 600 horsepower and be a terror on the track.
This is where touring car racing comes to life. We're back. We're back to the Touring Car America podcast with Joe Jordan.
So we're here on the TC America podcast with Inside the Series with series manager Jim Jordan. Jim, Portland was a great weekend. We had some great touring car races. What do you take out of the weekend?
What I'm happy about the most, I think, is the wide variety of people that made it to the podium. The only repeat winner was Johann Schwartz, who won both TC races. But even with that, he and Toby Grahovich were battling both races almost to the very end. Toby and Johann got together in race two, so Toby ended up finishing the race in the pits, so he was last classified top 10. But before that, just great racing, basically in all three classes.
Yeah, and the second day in touring car, well, first Paul Terry came back after a couple races off. They got their brakes figured out on that thing. He drove a great race in race one, ended up third, ended up just off the podium in race two and fourth. But Robert Nimkoff and Chandler Hull, second and third, that's a good result. I actually picked Robert Nimkoff in our pregame show. He didn't quite win, so Robert, you let me down a little bit, but I did pick you to win. But it was a nice effort for him. I think that's the best finish he's had all year.
Yeah, well, Joe, your clairvoyance, you were counting on Toby and Johan potentially taking each other out. And that came close to happening, but unfortunately, it was just Toby got taken out. Johan went out for the win, but Nimkov, Robert just did a great job. Chandler Hull and the Copart Bremer World Racing, they're always fighting for that podium. So, and thanks for calling out Paul Terry. I'm really happy that Paul came back with that Nissan, skipped Sonoma after some challenges earlier in the season, but he came back strong, drove two really good races, made the podium for race one and just off the podium for race two. So great job by him. And again, just kind of a good and fun weekend.
Yeah. Moving on now to the touring car, TCA and TCR. Sorry about that. Also some wild racing there. Two different winners in TCR. We had Mason Filippi won the first day, and Michael Hirkson won the second day. So there's some great racing there as well. I was actually surprised that the VWs dominated the second day as much as they did. I don't know if you were surprised by that in TCR.
Well, I think one of the reasons they dominated so well is somewhat, obviously they were hooked up with good speeds. They both qualified 1-2. But Portland's an extremely challenging track to pass on. And I think once you got out front, you can make your car pretty wide. So the top three there, actually the top, the whole TCR field and the TCR Cup field, very, very tight racing from top to bottom. And Michael Hirdson has been running just a championship-type season. We always see him on the podium, and to see him break through again for a win is great. Nate Vincent, he just hasn't had as much consistency as Michael has. Obviously, always fighting for the podium. And Mason Filippi, he comes back, took a couple races away. And for him to come back, he's gotten split the victories the last two weekends. So great to see Mason and the Hyundai doing so well. Also like the fact that Michael McCann, he transferred into one of the sequential cars with the Audi. He was instantly on pace. James Walker was, again, pretty fast. Fast all weekend, and again, any of those top five in Victor Gonzalez, he just kind of had an off weekend. I'm not sure if the BOP didn't favor his car or what the situation was, but again, it's nice to see five different brands, six different drivers, all up there competing competing hard. And also just want to give a shout-out again to Brian Putt in the E-Euro Parts team. Brian has just had a great season, very consistent, and obviously taken wins in the majority of the races.
Yeah, it was a good weekend. The things you noted, I noted as well. Victor just had an off weekend after having such a stellar weekend at Sonoma. The Filippi did really well day one. There's four cars that qualified within a hundredth of or a tenth of a second of each other for day two. And, yeah, it was just kind of one-lined and tough to pass. So it made it rough for TCR. And in TCA in race one, you know, Nick Whitmer won again. So he's kind of been dominating. But it was mixed up for a long time. I think Chris Haldeman probably led the most laps.
Yeah, I would say for the whole weekend, Haldeman and the Honda Civic Si probably led the most laps of anybody over the two races. I really thought he had raced 2-1 also. Some of the other competitors had had some mishaps. But I tell you what, after the full course yellow and then red flag, that just let Mark Pombo and Tyler Maxson back into the race. And unfortunately, Chris couldn't hold on for the win. He was kind of a little bit of a punching bag towards the end, and ended up on the podium. So again, podiums for that Honda Civic Si, but Chris just hasn't broken through yet. Great news for the Mini team. The Mini team taking their first victory in our class. They've been relatively consistent with podiums, but this was their first win. Also had a podium the previous day, which was good. Again, I like seeing a variety of people up there. That was Nate Nuremberg, who got his podium second place finish on Saturday. So again, good variety of people up there, and just That's what we want in TC America. We want different people fighting for the podiums, everyone with an opportunity. Looking at the TCA field, it was four different brands in the top four positions, and we really like that. We like Honda and Mini and Mazda and Subaru all fighting it out for that last race. And Subaru obviously has the most wins this year, but again, like on this weekend, I think Honda led the most laps, but Subaru took a victory and Mini took a victory.
Yeah, and a shout out to Sally McNulty getting her best finish of sixth this year. Oh, also, excuse me, Ben Bettenhausen finishing seventh, I think, was his best spot. In the second race on the last lap, that's when everything happened. I mean, Haldren was leading. It was right after the yellow flag. I thought the yellow flag would help him not burn off his tires. I pretty much thought Chris had it. And I know Tyler and he got together a little bit, got scuffled, and Pombo came out on top for Mini's first win. So that was awesome to see. I got to give a shout out to Rob Crocker. We'll tell that story a little bit. So Rob Crocker, in the second race, he was the cause for the red flag. He impacted the tire wall exiting the Shelton chicane, and they had to rebuild the tire wall. He had a pretty good thump, ended up hurting his wrist or breaking his wrist or something like that. But Jim, you're going to have to tell this story. So Jim was going to medical, and they were going to transport him to a hospital, but Rob was refusing to leave, is what my understanding was, because he thought he might have gotten the best start award. Is that true?
Well, he was obviously in a lot of pain, and but as they go through this, he's talking with his team about what a great start he got. And then he said, I might have gotten the best start award. So Portland being unique, when you're in the infield, you're in the infield. There's no way to get out. And we knew we were going to have to transport him just to get x-rays on his arm. So in our discussions, he's going, man, I really want that best start award. And I knew that that was going to be impossible for him to go to the podium because the ambulance needed to leave in between the end of the race and the start of the next race. So I went running up the timing and scoring, found out that, yes, he did win the award, then ran down to the podium area, grabbed the big check, the big sign saying he won it, and made sure I got his whole team into emergency, and we took a great photo of him posing with the big check for the best start award. So that's a picture I'm proud to have. It was fun to celebrate with the entire Tech Sport team, and we got that done. We're able to get him out and on his way to the hospital in between two races.
And he's recovering now. He's got a couple screws in his wrist. He thinks he's most likely going to miss Watkins Glen, but I think it's a great story, great attitude of that being so important to him. Yeah, he's in pain. He's not feeling well at all, but he is feeling that big check and that big award.
Well, that's typical racer. You know, they're always competitive, and he's as competitive as anyone, and he wanted that recognition, and we did our best to give it to him. So, again, if you don't make it to Watkins Glen, we'll miss you. Hopefully you'll see it Road America, and you could get on the podium or get another one of those awards.
So I think this is the second race. Taylor Hagler also got another top five, so that's their second top five for the weekend. Ben Bettenhausen was there, but Stephen Jew got his best result this year in seventh. So that's great after coming back from Sonoma. So we're moving on to Watkins Glen at the end of August. But, Jim, you're headed, in a few days, you're headed to Spa for the 24 hours of Spa, and you've got some meetings going on and some other things going on there. Can you tell us what you're going to be doing there, Jim, besides having fun?
Sure. Most of my time for the last few weeks has been spent on schedules for next year. So what generally happens, this is the meeting of all the SRO organizations from all over the world. Everyone comes to Spa, first off, because it's such a huge event. It's an all-hands-on-deck where we'll have several people from our race control working race control, taking shifts in the Spa 24. For me, it's a matter of doing meetings. I'll have meetings with various manufacturers that are either in the TC field or thinking about competing within the TC America class, but also just final finalizing the schedule. They'll be releasing the worldwide SRO GT3 schedule for the major championships we have at GT3, including the U.S. They should be releasing those schedules on Friday of the Spa weekend, a big press conference. Based upon that and some other opportunities, I'm working hard on putting just the best possible 2020 schedule together for our teams. And so Spa is going to be extremely busy up until race time. Once the 24-hour race starts, my duties are much less, but actually showing up in Belgium on Tuesday and have meetings starting Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, press conferences, that sort of thing. And then the race is actually the thing that's anticlimactic. Although I will say, last year got to watch the start from right in Eau Rouge, and we'll certainly do that again. And it's amazing. Over 70 GT3 cars coming down through Eau Rouge to start the race, and it's an incredible experience.
Yeah, it's a premier GT3 class event in the world. So it's exciting to be a part of SRO for this event, and I'm very jealous that you're going to be here. I thought real quickly we'd go over the points heading to Watkins Glen. In touring car, we got Johann Schwartz leading with 150. This is all unofficial, by the way. Tober Grahovic second at 109. Robert Nimkov third at 77. Cameron Evans fourth with 73. And Steve Strymer in fifth with 69.
Yeah, good good points battle. Those are all BMWs. I expect Paul Terry to be even more competitive as we go through the rest of the season. I think he's still got an opportunity to claw his way back into the top five in points, which will just be amazing. Looking towards the bottom of the top 10, it's going to be interesting to see if Jeff Rica's back. I know he's been working on a kind of an interesting, fun project that he's hoping to debut at Watkins Glen, a new TC class car. So it'll be fun to see if he can get it done. So again, Watkins Glen is going to be a fun weekend, and we'll look forward to seeing more diversity in the TC class.
And looking at the points lead for TCR and TCA, in TCR, Michael Hirkson is leading the way. He's got a significant advantage, but there's still time to go. So he's got 192 points to his teammate Nate Vincent's 148. James Walker's in third with 125, tied with Mason Filippi. And Victor Gonzalez is fifth with 93.
Yeah, it's a good points battle, but again, Michael's been just strong basically every race, and if he wins a championship this year, it's going to be due to both speed and consistency. The rest of the folks, Mason has probably been the fastest the races he's run, but since he hasn't run all the races, that just gifted Michael a big points lead. But again, we're heading to some tracks where something Watkins Glen Road America, I think, are going to highlight the speed of the Audi. So although Michael McCann basically started at Portland with 0 points in the sequential class, he could be a real spoiler. And I know Victor Gonzalez in that Honda is just, he's going to be fast again. So should be fun.
Yep. Looking at the TCA drivers, right now you've got Nick Whitmer leading the way with 149 points in his Tech Sport Subaru. Tyler Maxton in the Copeland Motorsports Global MX-5 Cup car is second with 131. Mark Pombo in the Mini is third with 102. And Chris Haldeman is fourth with the X-Factor car with 92. And Nate Nuremberg is fifth in the second Mini with 80 points.
Again, the top four different brands represented, which is something that I really like. Whitmer and Pombo are both two really good, really experienced racers, and they're competing against the kid. So Tyler, 14 years old, is second in points in that Mazda. And then Chris Haldeman, who's been a longtime driver, but first time really racing a front-wheel drive car. He just keeps getting better and better and better as the season goes on. So I think... I think as we head into the end of the season, it's going to be Whitmer trying to hold on to his points lead, and the four guys, five folks right below him, will include a Taylor, because she is consistently kind of in that top five finishing order. Those folks are going to be splitting up, dividing the points, and all of them coming after Whitmer.
Yeah, and I think that I actually really expect one of the Hondas to win in the next three weekends. So Chris has been leading that charge, but Taylor hasn't been too far behind, and Cole Serrallo's been doing well. Also, he got a fourth up at Portland. So I see the Hondas coming. The Mini, it was great to see them get on the top step of the box. Congratulations to them. And, Tyler and Copeland just continue to be consistent.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting to me, though, we're heading to tracks where drafting becomes critical because they're high-speed tracks. So this is where the two Minis working together and the whole gaggle of Honda Civic SIs that X-Factor Racing, that may be their untold advantage. I know the tech sport team's going to be working hard to get their Subarus. They got some time to get the Subarus back up to speed. Whitmer's going to be looking for a drafting buddy, and whether that's Robert coming back or Bettenhausen or PJ Gronke, whichever one of those folks, Damon, one of those people's got to come up, step through, and really help Whitmer, because I could see team tactics coming into play. That's obviously something we don't encourage, but the reality is you're going to help a teammate more than you're going to help somebody else. So that's an area where X-Factor and the Mini folks really potentially have an advantage on these two high-speed tracks where drafting is really important.
Well, Jim, enjoy your trip to Spa. Try to get us the best schedule we can for next year. Do you see any other vehicles showing up here for Watkins Glen? Anything different happening?
Well, Watkins Glen, I expect two new cars in the TC class, one of which we've talked about before, which is Jeff Rica with his Hyundai Veloster. So that car should be there, but you never know till it's there. And then a brand that competes in the other classes is hoping to debut a car also at Watkins Glen. And I'm going to be a little coy. I probably blabbed before, so if you go back, you may be able to find it. But I, once in a while, I'm responsible and remember what I'm allowed to talk about when I'm not.
Well, that sounds great. Have a great trip to Spa. Appreciate you taking the time. I know you leave tomorrow, so really appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
Hi, my name is Corksport, and I'm a functioning Mazdaholic. It started in the golden dot-com days, slinging parts across seas, hanging out in the garage. But one thing led to another, and we kept saying, this could be better if we did this. That's how it always starts, with one small thing needs to be fixed, with something that could always be better in one way or another. The next thing I knew, I was singing Go Fast Mazda bits left and right, and somewhere along the way ended up with race cars hanging out in my garage. Now it's time to take those cars out of the garage and get back in the game. We'll see you at the track. Love, Corksport.
This is where touring car racing comes to life. We're back. We're back to the Touring Car America podcast with Joe Jordan.
This is a TC America podcast, 10 questions, and I'm with Bozy Tataravich. Bozy, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me on.
And Bozy, you're a crew member for Nick Whitmer. He drives a TCA car number 91 for Tech Sport in the Subaru. How'd you get involved in that team before we go any farther?
Correct. So I'm usually with Nick during the races, but at Tech Sport, we kind of float around, so when the races are going on, we basically everybody helps. Everybody else on the team, we work on all the cars. So, me and Nick, we have great working relationship, and I'm on the radio with him during the races, and we do setup and things like that. And then I also work with all the other great drivers and everybody else that works for Tech Sport, and of course Kevin and Doug that own Tech Sport. So basically, how I got involved there is the story kind of goes a little ways back, and it starts with one of those, classic racing stories where I had some friends that wanted to go racing, they decided to bring on as many friends as they could to help them go racing. So, you know, when you're trying to just get started, you don't really have the funding or anything like that. So it was basically a friend of mine named Jack Root. He's an automotive writer. He currently runs editorial for Haggerty Magazine, but back a few years ago, we were both contributing to some of the same publications, and he had some racing experience and had done some pony stuff and things like that in years past. And he had purchased, his wife actually had purchased a Mazda MX-5, a former Pep car, and they wanted to run it in some kind of mid-level endurance type series. So they started working on it, and they were kind of, you know, working on it themselves, and they had pumped it out to a few people, and we're chatting, you know, at some kind of dinner or meeting or chatting about it. And at that time, I hadn't really been involved in racing that much. I had run dealerships and, like, repair shops and tuning shops, so I had experience, you know, doing things like alignments and, you know, a lot of stuff that people would bring their race cars to me to fix certain elements, but I hadn't really been at the racetrack. So their car needed some work, so, you know, I told them to ship it down to me here in North Carolina, and me and my brothers basically spent a couple of months just going through everything, updating everything, and, you know, installing new belts, updating power suppression, and then they decided to go race. So they went racing and kind of collected a small crew of people, but it wasn't really working out. And so me and my brother joined, and we got a couple of other friends and started crewing for them. So after a while, then I enjoyed it, and being kind of the most experienced person there, I kind of became, you know, the leader of the group or the crew chief or car chief, kind of all in one at, you know, that level, and things started off. So we did that for a year and a half or 2 years, and about, I don't know, 2 years ago maybe, Jack ended up coming into Honda Accord that was running in the PC class, so it's a Accord V6 coupe. And that car was previously run by Range Racing, I believe, but basically he traded a car he had for that Accord, and that Accord was still homologated and still basically fully legal to run in the series. So last year, he checked, and it looked like things would work out, so he decided to try to enter the car for the TC race at Washington Glen last fall.
Yeah, I think it was a black car. I remember it.
Yes, that's exactly it. So he called me up. He's like, I think I'm going to be able to, you know, get some funding together and get some stuff going, but we might actually be able to make this. You know, can you come and, you know, work on the car for me? You know, be crew chief, mechanic, everything, you know, whatever is needed there. So, you know, for me, it was like, you know, why not? You know, I've done all this other stuff. It's, you know, kind of been amateur, mid-level, lower-level stuff, and this is, you know, the chance to, you know, do a professional race. So we came in there. Neither of us really had any experience, and we, you know, Jack brought his wife and his son. It was like a family affair, you know, just setting up a pop-up tent, brought the car there with, you know, a single fuel truck, and then some of our other friends showed up to help out work on the car, and we had a great time. So, you know, we, you know, the car obviously hadn't been set up, and we didn't really even have the resources. We didn't even have scales or anything to set it up. We basically relied on the scales and tried kind of to see and had a rough estimate of where the car was and then make some slight adjustments and then get it back to, you know, just, you know, to make sure that we were legal, not really to make the car optimal for the time. But he ran pretty well because we were limited. You know, he qualified like 20 pairs, but throughout the race, he was able to make up some spots. I think he finished like 13th or 14th. So for us, you know, running basically as a family and close friends, you know, run team on, you know, their most budget, it was a fun time. But while we were there at the race, because I was, you know, working all this stuff for the car, making sure that it was technically legal, I was, you know, kind of on the competitor portion of the website. So I was, you know, doing all the technical stuff, but I also noticed there was like a, I don't know, classified or help wanted section there for some of the teams. So I saw the tech support was looking for like crew chiefs, mechanics, and stuff like that for 2019. So I kept that in the back of my mind, made a note of it, and then, I don't know, November or December last year, I reached out to Kevin based on that ad, and we started talking, and, you know, I like what he was saying. He liked what I was saying. So basically, in January, I sent him over my info, and he sent me a plane ticket to go to Florida. And that's how we started this season.
That's cool.
Kind of went from there.
Yeah, I had no idea what the background was or where you came from. So I love hearing about that and how you've established yourself in a short time. And, I've seen you all year at the track and didn't know much about you, but just was curious. So I remember that car running at Watkins Glen. I think you ran with some, was it the smoking tire guy or something like that who ran with you guys at Road Atlanta in that MX-5 or someone like that? I remember hearing about that car. So
that's correct. So smoking tire, that's Matt Farr. He's a good friend of mine. So we have a little group. It's all like auto writers and like auto reviewers and stuff like that. So he's run with us in that MX-5 on some of the endurance races. And it's basically with that car, the way that Jack and his wife Charlie ended up funding it is, they got close friends that kind of wanted to, participate. So they would, kind of chip in for the car, and then everybody would get to drive it.
Yeah.
So it was, kind of like the labor of love. So it was a whole group of friends there that just kind of all chipped in to drive it. So Matt drove it, and Travis is better. Travis is also better in Chief of Road and Track. So he's driven that car. So whole bunch of kind of like media writer types.
Yeah, that's very cool. And you were talking about Jack's effort, how it was a family affair. There's tons of teams that are even still that way. And, a lot of heart and soul goes into everyone who races. And that's just a great example of that. So I love hearing that story. Right. So what about, I know that you were born in Sarajevo. Can you talk a little bit about that? And you immigrated here from Sarajevo. What was that like?
Yeah. So I was born in 1986. I was born in 1986 in Sarajevo, and I lived most of my childhood there, about 10 or 50 miles from the city. And then, unfortunately, in the early 90s, war broke out in Bosnia. So because of the war, we had to kind of, leave our home, and we ended up going to Montenegro, and then we were able to apply to a refugee program with an organization called IOM, the International Organization for Migration. So we took about a year and a half through all these like questionnaires and tests and stuff, but we finally got approved to come here, to America. So in 1995, they kind of gave us a few choices, and luckily for us, my dad had a cousin here in North Carolina that had already come through the program, so we got priority to go to North Carolina. But in most cases, they just kind of assigned you to whatever organization on the other end was accepting people that they wanted to help. Because most of these programs were connected through like nonprofit organizations or churches or nonprofit clubs and things like that. So luckily, my dad's cousin was here, and he was able to connect us with the church to help us get here, and they gave us a loan basically to get plane tickets and stuff so we could get here. And we got here in late 1995, and I did first grade over there before war started, and then I started fourth grade here. My brother didn't get a chance to go to school over there, and he started second or third grade here, so we just kind of got, put into the situation. But, the way things are set up here, just everybody was welcoming, and we were able to get up to speed quickly. And, after a while, my parents gave up kind of white-collar jobs back home to work, in a cabinet factory here to provide for me and my brother, and they worked their way up into better positions. And me and my brother kind of, were able to go to school and learn all these things. And actually, part of how that happened is why me and my brother were into cars. So because my dad was an attorney back home, couldn't get a job here doing law, he worked in the wood factory, and then he found out that he could be a mechanic and make a little more, just, working flat rate and billing, so many hours.
Sure.
So when we were in our teens, he was a mechanic, and he would bring cars home that he would buy that were broken to fix and flip. So that's how me and my brother got into cars, and that's kind of where my love of cars started, and partially, why I ended up here. That's kind of, you know, just a quick general story.
Yeah, so you came over when you were 10, and did you speak English at all, or was it something you had to learn once you got here?
We didn't speak any English at all. Luckily, you know, when you're a young kid and you want to make friends, you kind of pick that stuff up fairly quickly. So for the first semester that we were here, we had basically all day ESL classes, which was just English. And then by 8 or 9 months in here, we were able to start taking regular classes. And, you know, by that next time of grade, we were, you know, basically fully speaking, just because, you know, we wanted to be able to talk to other kids, and we watched, you know, cartoons in English on TV and stuff, so we picked that up, you know, fairly quickly.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible to think that here you are, a 10-year-old being uprooted because of war. It sounds like you were probably uprooted when you were 7 or 8 and living in a, you know, refugee camp or wherever you had to live in Montenegro until you got approved to come here, come to a country where you don't speak the language. Your dad, who was a lawyer, had to take whatever job he could get to try to start over. And I mean, what a great story. So he ended up becoming a mechanic because he knew how to work on cars a little bit, and he knew he could make a little bit of money. And he taught you guys how to flip cars. So that's what you and your brother did, and that's how you kind of fell in love with cars.
That's pretty much how it goes. At one point, you know, we were running a shop where me and my brother and my dad were all running a shop together. We were fixing cars, and we opened a dealership and an export business and a tuning shop. So even after kind of my dad stopped working at the dealership, he ended up in a career in like IT technology, and now, you know, he does stuff all over the place, you know, as like an IT director. He still has that automotive enthusiasm. So even as he was working in this high-level position, we were still kind of running a little shop, you know, on the side where, you know, we were working on pet projects and stuff, just because all three of us are so enthusiastic about it.
That's really cool. And, you know, someone who came at 10 years old, didn't speak the language, and you're in your 30s somewhat now, and now you're writing for automotive magazines. That's a pretty cool success story, if you ask me.
It's pretty fun. And, I always enjoy just writing about stuff. And even, you know, like, I write professionally now. And even that kind of grew out of enthusiasm, because as a teenager, I would be, you know, on message boards and forums communicating with other people that were like me. And when I would find out cool things that other people didn't know about, I would write little guides and, you know, things like that onto the message board. And then after a while, I figured out that, you know, I could put, you know, form the stuff that I'm writing into something concrete. And then somebody will pay you to write it, you know, for their magazine or blog. So that, you know, all of that, it all kind of works together.
Yeah, and all just because of the enthusiasm. You know, enthusiasm can take you so far in life, and it just shows now, you know, here you are. You met some people through the automotive writing business. You got involved with, I can't remember what you ran. Was it AER or something like that? One of those endurance series. And, you know, that's
just AER.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the FCP guys also came up through AER, so nothing wrong with that at all, but it's a good place to learn and develop skills and meet people and kind of develop your craft. And that's one thing I try to do with this podcast, is to let people know that anyone can do this. It just takes a lot of heart and a lot of desire and a plan. And, you know, sometimes not even a plan, but just a willingness to put yourself out there. And, you know, you're coming from a crew perspective, and I haven't talked to anyone. We've been focusing on drivers so far, and I want to get more stories out there from the crew and from people who are involved in the series. So people know the different ways they can get involved with Touring Car America and how they can, you know, set their own path.
And that's the thing, is that there are so many ways to get involved. A lot of times it just takes reaching out. So, like, if you're at an event and see us, like, if you come and say hello and you have some interest, I mean, we have people, you know, with, you know, different types of things, even if it's just for a day, if you just come hang out and try some stuff out, you know, they'll see what we're doing, or even, you know, come, you know, like, intern for a day, or maybe you like it, and then, you know, you can kind of figure out something else. There's just so many different opportunities and so many different levels of what you can do.
Yeah, and that's the fun part about it. So there you are. Let's move along a little bit. So you were flipping cars when you were, it sounds like you were in high school and that kind of age. So what'd you do after that? After say high school, what'd you do?
So I went to college for IT, kind of, you know, same type of deal, but, you know, that's what my dad was doing at the time, and I learned some stuff about that. I went to college for IT, and I still do some of that type of stuff, but from there, I ended up working for, like, a web hosting company and some other IT-related gigs, and after that point, I became, like, an IT consultant. So I would do short-term contracts and small stuff, and, you know, if we kind of put all that together and fast forward today, like, my life today is a mixture of all of that. So I do some IT consulting. I do, like, mechanical consulting for, like truck, like heavy haul trucks and tractor trailers. Then I do the racing stuff, and then I do the writing. And, you know, I combine, you know, five or six different gigs kind of that I have, you know, a passion for, you know, to kind of give me, you know, a complete livelihood, so to say.
Yeah, and it's the gig economy, right? That's kind of the way things are. And by doing that, you can kind of get time to go do the races. You know, you can set your schedules and plan yourself, your life around what the passion is. And it seems like the passion, at least at this point, is racing and automotive. So I love the spirit that you have and you know, the putting yourself out there and, you know, making a name for yourself. So, welcome. You know, I'm so glad you're with us and so glad you're in the series.
I appreciate it. And I've enjoyed my time there, and, you know, I'm really enjoying the series, you know, this year and everything that's going on there, and enjoying working with TechSport. It's, you know, talking about that family atmosphere, even though TechSport is bigger than, you know, a little group of family and friends, it still, you know, has that kind of family, you know, family feel. So it's still, you know, a very close group, and, you know, once we started kind of going through the year, everybody works with everybody else, and then, you know, everybody makes sure that, you know, everybody's taken care of. So, you know, even with stuff like, I, you know, like, I get very focused, and, you know, some other guys get very focused on that, and, you know, we're working on it for a few hours, and, you know, we do stuff like forget to eat. So, you know, Deb, one of the owners, she'll come by, like, you know, tell us to go eat, and then, you know, if we don't go eat, she'll bring us a sandwich, make us eat right there. So stuff like that, you know, people care. I mean, it's very cool to be involved with something like that.
Yeah, you know, I Sunday at Portland, I walked by and wanted to check in with TechSport and see how things were going, because I knew there was a couple mechanical issues and you had to change a motor in one car and had to do head gaskets in another. I think it was Rob Crocker's car. So I know that most of the team was there all night, didn't get any sleep, and everyone had a smile on their face, which, you know, I've done that before. I've been in your shoes, being up all night, not going to sleep and trying to make a race. It's not easy. I mean, it's a labor of love. It's not easy. There's definitely times that you question, what the heck am I doing? But if you get the results, you know, you get the results, yeah, and makes it all worth it.
Exactly. It can be trying at times, but I like to win. I like to win at things. So being, you know, part of something where we're either winning or we're making, you know, striving toward winning. So, like, you know, Saturday night, you know, mentioning Rob, which, you know, Rob, like, he's an excellent driver, but he just had some, like, terrible luck in certain situations this season. So, like, you know, we have to do some work on his motor, and, like, it was, you know, all hands on deck. We need to fix it, because everybody wants him to do well. And, you know, he shows that he can do well. And we were able to get all that together, get the car pressed, and we did some setup on it, basically tried to make it as perfect as possible. And he had a great start. He actually got that award for having the best car, but unfortunately he had that incident halfway through the race, and, you know, where he unfortunately hurt his wrist. But, like, all of that, you know, like, Nick's been very successful, and, you know, there are, you know, other drivers on the team that are either making progress moving up or very close, you know, to being on the podium or, you know, being in the top five. And basically, we want to be able to help everybody and, you know, as a team to you know, win as much as possible.
Yeah, I got to give a quick shout out to Rob Crocker, because I interviewed him. I also, I've actually never even met him. I've seen him around, but I still haven't met him in person. And he hit the wall at in the festival. I guess they call it the Shelton Chicane now. And he ended up breaking his wrist because it got caught in the steering wheel. And my brother was you know, going to medical to make sure he was okay. My brother, Jim Jordan, who he's a series manager for Touring Car. And Rob refused to get taken to the hospital because he knew, he was pretty sure he had won the Best Start Award. So they have that great picture of everybody around him as he's getting loaded into the ambulance, and he's got the huge Best Start check in his hand, you know, the big cardboard check. Yeah. And a lot of respect for that guy to be that way. And I know how hard he works at it, and he has had a bit of a rough year, but you know, he's a young guy who's laying it all on the line, and really got to give him a shout out for that. I'd never ever heard of anyone refusing to get into the ambulance because they wanted to make sure they could get that award. So good for you, Rob Crocker. So
yeah, Rob's awesome. I always good talking with him, and you know, he's kind of, you know, always hanging out and just joking around. So you know, but he's a very serious driver on the other hand too. But it was just, you know, hopefully, you know, he had a surgery a couple of days ago, and that's supposed to be healing up. And hopefully, I think he's going to miss Watson's run, but they said about 10 weeks to heal. But hopefully, in a couple of races, he'll be back, and you know, we'll have a car ready for him to show a good result.
Yeah, Crocker, I know that you're probably going to listen to this, so we're all rooting for you. We're proud of you, just the attitude that you've taken and the spirit that you have. So we're all rooting for you. We'll see you when you get healthy. Just get healthy first and then come back. So we're looking forward to that. So what's the future? What do you want to do in the future? I mean, do you want to be editor of a magazine, own a magazine? Do you want to run a team? Do you want, I mean, what's your future look like, Bozy?
That's a very really good question. And to tell you the truth, I don't know. I've always been kind of the mindset is just keep trying things out until I find something that I like and then stick with it and then try to excel at it, you know, to do the best. So as far as the writing goes, I've done a little bit of editing here and there. And honestly, I don't want to be, you know, like an editor or to run a magazine. Like what I do now, which is basically writing technical stories or contributing to other people with technical information, is kind of, you know, I find that a perfect fit. And that also kind of works with my racing because the stuff I do in racing gives me experience, it gives me background to be able to write about certain things.
Yeah, you're the expert, right?
Yeah, so, you know, it all kind of fits together. And the magazine side, because I've learned, you know, how media works, and, you know, how things are to be represented, that's kind of helped me, you know, just, you know, representing myself or representing who I work for in racing to know, you know, how to get my message out if I want to say something, you know. So it all works here and there. But, I mean, you know, I really enjoy racing. I enjoy writing, and I enjoy, you know, some of this other stuff I do. And, you know, maybe at some point, you know, in the future, just, you know, as a rough guess, you know, like owning a team or running a team might be something I would like, you know, but I really enjoy, you know, the wrenching aspect of it, and I enjoy, you know, doing things, making tweaks or, you know, making small changes here, small changes there, just kind of trying to find the best, you know, mechanical parts of a car to help the driver win, and then winning, you know, it's very satisfying. So, you know, it's hard to say at this time, you know, what I really like to do, but that's, you know, kind of, you know, I'm floating in the area of what I really enjoy, so it works out.
Yeah, I tell people all the time that if winning wasn't really difficult, it wouldn't be as enjoyable. You know, if it was easy, everyone could do it. You wouldn't enjoy it so much when you do win. So I hear what you're saying about that. So I know how all of you guys at Tech Sport, how hard, you know, the owners work, and I know how all you guys work. So, yeah, I'd just say keep at it and see where it goes. What's your family doing now? What's your dad doing now?
So my dad right now he's an IT director for a mattress company. He is currently actually back in Europe in Spain with my mom. They're doing something for one of the places for the company he works for, you know, some plan for office, and then they're doing a little vacationing. So they've kind of, you know, gone through the whole process of working, you know, really hard, you know, laborious jobs, and then going back to school and all this other stuff while waiting me and my brother and then they basically work their way up back up to white collar jobs, you know, now that they're getting close to their retirement. And, you know, my mom, the same, she worked in the factories, and then she went back to school for accounting, and she worked in that for a while. And she retired from the accounting and decided that she wanted to do something else to help people. So she got her nursing assistant certificate. So now she, there's some elderly folks that she works with like once or twice a week. She helps them out. And then whenever my dad's traveling, she kind of travels with him. So, you know, they're in a good spot. They've, you know, put me or brother, you know, to they've brought us to a place where we can have a better life, put us through school. And now, you know, they're at the point where they can enjoy themselves a little bit.
Well, it's, you know, those of us who are born here in the United States kind of take the advantages that we have for granted. And I love hearing stories like your families who take the bull by the horns and take whatever they, you know, get a loan to come here and then just work their butts off to achieve whatever they want to achieve. So your family's a true American success story. And I love hearing those kind of stories and hearing that kind of success. And, you know, as a 10-year-old kid, did you ever think you'd be writing for an American car magazine? Probably not. Did you ever think you'd be working for a race team? Again, probably not, but you've done it. And that's great to see.
Not at all, yeah. It's wild. Yeah, I would have never thought of, you know, any of that. And, you know, the closest I've seen, you know, for racing was, you know, seeing some big races that were, you know, recorded and rebroadcast back home that we could get from here, and that, you know, throughout my childhood, I might have been, you know, 10 races. So, you know, being there and, you know, being here and working with all these people, it's kind of wild. But, you know, that's kind of, you know, well, I appreciate, you know, where I'm at and the opportunity we've had just basically showing up here. And, of course, there's been a lot of hard work, but there's opportunity, and, you know, there's always, you know, something great that you can accomplish, you know, if you kind of work hard for it.
Yeah, Bozy, you're a true Renaissance man, the IT guy, the automotive writer, the race car mechanic and setup guy. Sounds like just like an all-around good guy. I haven't met you. I mean, I've talked to you at the track, but really haven't really got to know you, so it's been very great to do that. You can follow along with him on social media. So tell them how they can follow you on social media, Bozy.
So I am very active on Twitter. On Twitter, you can find me at Hoonable, so that's Hoonable. And then I'm also on Instagram, and that one's Ebozi, that's Chebozi. So that's kind of the two main platforms you'll see of, you know, what I'm up to, what I'm doing. And I'm very, very active on Twitter, so, you know, that's kind of the place where I answer questions to people, whether it's about what I do in writing, whether it's what I do about what I do in racing, or whether it's about whatever food I'm eating that day. So, you know, anybody can feel free to reach out there.
Yeah, there's been a ton of stuff about the Corvette that was launched last night, and I saw on Twitter you were answering about a bazillion questions. So I know it's a really busy time for you. I appreciate you taking the time, and people can read. Yeah, people can read your articles on Hagerty, Road and Track, Auto Week, Jalopnik. I'm sure there's others. Feel free to mention them if you'd like to.
Those are the main ones. Most often I'm Hagerty, just because they've launched this whole new editorial product, and my good friend Jack is running that, so I've kind of pushed a lot of my stuff since I'm basically a freelance journalist. I'm not employed by anyone full-time. It's always just contracts with everybody, but Hagerty is kind of the main spot, which I just submitted two stories about the Corvette to them, so anybody that's interested in kind of like geeky tech stuff, that should be up on the Hagerty website on Monday, so you can check that out.
Geeky tech stuff, IT stuff. Is there anything you don't do, Bozy? Are you a good cook?
I'm not a very good cook. So that's, you know, so that I rely on others for that. But, you know, there's always good food to be found. And that's kind of one of my things during race weekends. Is my goal is always to see if I can find food for back home. And I was actually successful just recently in Portland because there's a big population from the Falcons right there in Vancouver, Washington. So Sunday, since our race was fairly early in the day, I kind of separated off from everybody in the afternoon and went back and, like, food from back home. So, that, you know, I enjoy eating, so that works out.
So food from Sarajevo, that's what you're looking for. Yugoslavian exactly, food, I don't even know if that's a correct term or Bosnian. Yeah, yeah. I have no idea anymore, right? When I was a kid, it was Yugoslavia.
Yeah,
but.
It used to be all Yugoslavia, but Yugoslavian, Bosnian, Serbian, Croatian, that's all kind of the same region. But, yeah, I try to find it wherever I can because we don't really have it here in North Carolina. We do, but it's a little further south in the state. But luckily, a lot of the tracks, they're near big population centers. Sometimes
it's
nearby, so it works out.
And now people who listen to this who are involved in the series, I do have a lot of listeners in the series as well as fans. So think about that. Food for Bozy. You can go talk to them at the Tech Sport trailer at the race weekends. And if you know of any good food from his homeland, please tell him where it is. Help him out. He's got lots going on at the racetrack, so you can save him some time. So, Bozy, really appreciate your time, and again, I loved hearing your story.
Thanks for listening to the Touring Car America podcast, where touring car racing comes to life. Please like, comment, and subscribe to the show. And for more series information, go to the series website at tcamerica.us.